Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Smoke Row Podcast. My name is Alexis Armstrong, your host. The Smoke Row Podcast is the place to celebrate and highlight women, trans women, and non-binary folk working within STEM and trade occupations. So please tune in, take a break, join us. We're on Smoke Row. And today we're extremely lucky to be joined by the lovely Brandy Ferentz, who is a refrigeration mechanic, a gas fitter, and an HVAC instructor. She's a mentor for women in skilled trades and HVAC apprentices, as well as starting her own business, Fair Trades Toolbox, which is a female-owned business that brings 20 years of hands-on experience. And its mission is really to educate skilled trade employers on how to integrate women into their male-dominated workforce and to make it a seamless transition for all parties involved, which is just a fantastic organization and institution. So we're going to talk kind of all things culture, working within skilled trades. And just thank you so much, Brandy, for coming on to the show.
Oh my God. Thank you so much, Alexis. It's fine. I hear you say all that. I'm like, who is that woman?
It's you.
Thank you. Such a nice intro.
You're welcome. Well, it's you. You did it. To start, maybe let's go back to the very, very beginning of, could you describe how you got into this trade? How did you discover being a refrigerator mechanic and gas fitter? And what drew you to this that you're like, yep, that's going to be my career?
Yeah, I don't think any little girl lays in bed and dreams of the day that she's going to be a refrigeration mechanic. Although,
no.
I look to a future where that may actually happen. Instead of having the Barbie condo, they might have a mechanical room, X and that.
I would love that. That would be so cute. Yeah,
I know. I'm already dreaming it up. But yeah, so it was like a lot of women today that you'll talk to that are in the skilled trades, or at least women that are, I would say, 30 plus. It's a second career for us. I did well in high school. I got pushed into the university pathway, as many of us do. And I grew up in a blue collar family, but that wasn't ever presented in an option at any level for me, whether from guidance counselors, teachers, or family. I did grow up in the time of, I was born in the 70s. A lot of my good years were the 80s and early 90s of my formative years, as they say. And yeah, it was looked upon as the lesser profession, right? It was blue collar still really carried that stigma, as I know it still does today, although we work hard to change. I did what I was told, like a good daughter should. And then at the end of it all, I handed my parents their very expensive diploma and I basically took off for a decade. I really found for me, I didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up. It wasn't for me. I'm very high energy. You'll see that I'm going to spin in my chair and move around. Yeah. And I really found like it was almost excruciating to have to sit at a desk. So during a co-op I did for my post-secondary degree, that was the feedback. We can't find her. She's never in the office. I was brutal in meetings, right? And so I just realized, you know what? It wasn't for me and I wasn't happy. I did need to make money because the other part of that coin is, Oh, you're not going to go to school. Now you have to fly on your own, right? What better way to make money than just to work in the bars, right? I did that for over 13 years. And then I really started getting to think into my early 20s, okay, what do I want to do? I don't want to be a 60-year-old working in a bar that I didn't really feel like there was room for advancement. And I did see a lot of my friends had been moving on in life and there is that pressure, right? And let's face it, when I was 27, I thought, oh my God, like 30 is going to be ancient, right?
Yes, completely. Yeah.
Yeah, because I turned 50 last year and I'm like, I can't believe it. But looking back then, I felt really old and I had to figure stuff out, but still didn't know what I wanted to do. But I knew a few things. I knew that I needed a job where I wasn't going to be replaced by technology. At this point, we were in the very early 2000s, and I'd seen a lot of people's parents lose their jobs. Factories were closing. Technology was really starting to take over a lot of industries, and a lot of jobs were becoming obsolete. The second part of that is I had to still be financially independent. I had been taking care of myself since I was 19, and I really got to say I was fiercely independent would be a good description. I couldn't see myself relying on anyone else to take care of me. And I knew I had to do something where I was going to be moving. It was really knowing the things I didn't like combined with the stuff I wanted out of a job. And then it just hit me. I loved hearing about my dad's day. When I was young, he had a little workbench downstairs. My dad's a master electrician.
Amazing.
And I loved playing with all his tools and stuff. And my male friends, they loved their jobs. And obviously, I still ran with very much a blue-collar crowd. And I loved hearing about their days. Like, we drive past buildings, they'd be like, yeah, I built that, or I did that. And I was like, cool is that? The light bulb went on and I thought, there wasn't a lot of social media. I don't even know if there was any at the time. But so I figured women were a huge part of this industry. And I was like, yeah, this is what I'm going to do. At the time, I wanted to be an electrician like my dad. So that was my turning point of, I guess, where it began, of how it all started in a sense. What pushed me off the cliff was I bought a little cabin because I didn't know, I wanted to do something with my money responsible.
But yes, I bought a house.
I still didn't know where I was going to settle. I was very much like a tumbleweed. So I bought this little cabin and it was off the grid. I never used it. It was only accessible by boat. So never drove a boat. But you know, and sometimes ignorance is bliss. I had no idea what I got myself into. But that really gave me those aha moments of I can do this and I want to do more of this. Now, how do I make money doing this?
It's trial by fire. Yeah, completely. That was your big experiment. There's so many cool parts of that story and I'm going through it. One thing that's crazy is the fact that you were from a blue collar family and had friends, family members within the trades, but then still didn't consider that that could be an option for you. That was like almost like a gap of maybe traditional roles or traditional kind of life path of not realizing that trades was a viable option. It's good that you brought that up of this old stigma that unfortunately I think sometimes is still there with trades is that it's viewed as a lesser option or it's viewed as not on the same path as university where in my mind, and hopefully we'll move there for full culture, is that they're equal and they have equal opportunity and equal level of merit. But because of that, I think you're right. A lot of women in skilled trades, they come as a second career in their 30s is when they enter into it. It sounds like you didn't really have any experience being a mechanic beforehand until you bought this cabin off the grid, which is a huge, huge undertaking. I couldn't even imagine. How did you learn to be comfortable with these tools and techniques? How did you get these skills and that you were like, then I can use this, I can be a mechanic? How did that happen?
I think that was still a developing thing even after I got into the trades. I'd say I wasn't necessarily comfortable for a long time, even after I was started my apprenticeship pathway. But I think it was more or less realizing that just because I'd never been given tools when I was young, or I didn't grow up in an environment where I was encouraged to use tools, that didn't mean that I couldn't learn. I think that was a big moment for me. Like as a woman prior to that, I would have said when I first bought the cabin, I did learn. So I obviously had to learn to drive a boat right away. But I remember I went out with the person who was in my life at that time. And I was really fortunate. The older gentleman I bought it from, he helped me out the first few years. Unfortunately, he passed away. But I'll never forget the first time I went over. It was April 29th, 2002. This is how well I remember it.
I love it.
And my partner was a tall, bigger person. The gentleman I bought it from, his name was Laszlo. Less we have the boat down on the beach, has to go into the water. And right away, of course, the person I was with, he goes to go get into the boat and jump in the boat. And Les, this tiny little man, he's like, no, Brandy has to learn how to do it. And I was just like, oh, and I didn't even move. Like, I assumed that they would do it for me, right? Because I'm like, this is the man stuff. And I think for me, even at that time, like, here's someone from a very much older generation. But yeah, there was something, I don't know where it came from. I'd known him for quite a few years in the bar. And obviously he saw something in me that I didn't even know was in myself at that moment when he was like, no, Brandy can do it. And he said right away, my partner, he's like, well, she's never done it before. And Les said, well, that doesn't mean she can't do it. That just means she hasn't learned to do it.
Oh my
goodness. And it really stuck with me. I get goosebumps right now because I remember that first time driving it. And was it pretty? No way. No.
It was fantastic.
The steering is backwards. And like, I had to pull the pull cord so many times. But you know, he sat there patiently. And that was really how the journey began as far as me changing my way of thinking. Because prior to that, I would have called somebody to do stuff for me. Or I would have called one of my male friends that knew how to do it. And I think as women, sometimes that just becomes like part of our culture in a sense. Instead of trying to do it ourselves, we're just used to having people on hand or people we can call and reach out to.
Or people that jump in, right? That's the part of their kind of socialization and culture as well. They don't even realize what they're doing, but then we accept it automatically. I've had to learn the same thing. And I've had wonderful mentors that have been like, no, let Alexis do it. Yes, we know that you can do it, but Alexis has never used this tool before and let her try. It's not going to be pretty again. Same thing with the boat. going to be a mess. And I'm going to be sitting there with the wrench being like, I have no idea how to do this, but that's fine. It's part of it. That's so beautiful that Les was such a wonderful mentor, especially being an older generation and kind of seeing something in you before you saw it in yourself, I think is a very beautiful thing. It's a cool transition of going from being like, yeah, this is such a cool job and I want to emulate these men in my life because they're having such a wonderful job, to then doing it.
It was terrifying. And really, though, that was one of the things I learned, that everything can be really scary. And I think that is what puts you off of it initially. But taking it slow, being patient with yourself and knowing that it's okay to make mistakes. It doesn't have to be perfect. I think for women, a lot, we're raised to be perfect. There's the statistic says we don't apply for jobs unless we meet 100% of the qualification. Yeah. Where our male counterparts apply for a job, they meet 60% of the qualification.
Yeah.
But that mentality really rules out for us for everything we do, right? If I can't do it perfect, I don't want to even try, right? Mm. I don't want to fail. Using a chainsaw has nothing to do with my gender. It's just me being comfortable with what I'm doing and learning how to do it.
I think there is this draw to perfectionism. And I also think that there's a fear of judgment if we're not perfect. We're held to such a standard. And I know I've been nervous that if I don't get something perfect, it's not even just a testament to me. It's a testament to my gender. You went from learning HVAC systems to then becoming an instructor and teaching it. And I was wondering if you could speak to that transition from learning to becoming an instructor and then teaching these young women.
I started dabbling in instructing early, like 2015. And my dad's actually an instructor too. And one of the things I loved is that he teaches electrical at the college in Windsor. I loved seeing that because as you get older, the trades does provide a lot of room for advancement and opportunity. After you're licensed and have so many years experience, you now qualify to move up the ladder in certain ways. It was funny when I first taught for the first time. And by the way, my classes are not gender specific. Only the first last couple of years have I had any female students. So out of a class of say like 50, I have two women. That's a record. I never went to school with another female. So for me to see two women in my class sitting side by side, it's just, yeah, I got this. Yeah. I'm like, yes, like this is professional. I'm like, okay, but you guys are good too.
You're feeling cool about your crush in class.
It's really cool. Yeah. I'm dumbing inside, right? When I first started teaching, actually, it was really nerve-wracking. It almost felt like I was very intimidated by my students. Being a woman, a female instructor in a male-dominated industry. Like when I first started teaching, it was a ninth school class. So all of these people were licensed tradesmen already and they were taking a gas fitter course. It's like an extra ticket. So I remember when I started teaching and this guy was like, but you don't even have any experience doing this. And I was like, whoa. I said, no, not only am I a gas fitter one, which is the highest ticket. I've worked in the industry for X amount of years and I'm still working in the industry on the tools. Teaching for a lot of tradespeople starts out part-time, which is what I still do in as is part-time. So it was really daunting. But the thing I love about it is that now, number one, even though I think I know my stuff, I learn every day too when I teach because someone has a new question or a new perspective. And I love plus technology changes my equipment that we work on so much. And it's just escalated so quickly that we are constantly learning in the industry, which is what makes it exciting, right? Because it's never stale. But I love now that when my male students go back or into the workforce and back onto job sites, it's not this anomaly to see a female tradesperson because they had a female instructor. So I'm already like that much ahead of the game for them and it doesn't seem weird. And for my couple of female students, I did have one actually just last year and she came up to me and it was right after orientation day. So we hadn't even started the course yet. And she goes, I was going to quit. This is the last class I came for orientation, but then I saw you. When I heard your credentials and that you're one of the instructors, I thought, oh, okay, so I can do this. It's not just for guys. Because it's sad to even think in this day and age that people are still assigning genders to the jobs. It's not, I like to do something with my hands. I'm mechanically inclined or I'm interested in it, but yet that's for guys to do. Especially in this world of gender fluidity, it's so bizarre to me that the skilled trades industry and the culture is still stuck in the Stone Ages. And that's really how in the last 2 years, especially, I've birthed this idea of wanting to run fair trades. I had one guy said, but my mom thinks it's super cool I have a female instructor. And I think to myself about his mom, and I think maybe she wanted to do something like this at one time. Those are good moments for me when I make a difference. And I feel like a lot of the differences people make in each other's lives, we don't get to see them. You know, we're all making a difference every day for each other, just to make it a little bit more of a more inclusive place, and the culture is that much better.
I love that answer. It's so right on so many dimensions that we have to keep on having this conversation that these jobs are like gendered, because we should be moving past this. It seems just completely ridiculous that we still have to have this conversation. But it's really what I think is really cool about this story being an instructor is the idea of representation, that it affects everybody and that it matters to everyone. To have young men come into this industry and realize that they have already had a mentor and already had someone in leadership that looks like you or looks a little bit different than them, that is so impactful. Right. And then to see maybe that generation to be like, his mom is going to be your biggest champion and that impact in her life. And it's probably because she wanted to do something different, having that kind of silent impact and affecting other people's lives. And that kind of positive change is really beautiful.
It was one of those nice surprises when someone said to me before, what was your goals when you got into the trades? And I just wanted to be a licensed journey person. And I saw nothing else beyond that. I just want my rent seal. I'll be writing for my license when I turn 40. And I'm like, there, I'm done. I'm going to retire. Instructing was one of the things I never saw coming. I wanted to be a teacher, but I didn't know there was other forms of being a teacher. I thought I had to just go and teach in the school system or the colleges. I didn't realize I could teach the skilled trades.
It's this old mentality of two-tiered education of university and book learning versus like practical skilled trades is that, of course, the education pathway is also going to be different.
So for our industry in Canada, like 70% of our learning through apprenticeship is on the tools and 30% is done at the college level. Upon completion, that means that like when these kids are coming to take these courses as an instructor, I deliver a theory portion, but I also have to deliver the practical. So that's where that really intertwines because, we have them in a shop, Terry, you've heard equipment. And as such, the instructor has to still be well-versed in all of it. But it really, for my license, it's equivalent, the amount of hours is equivalent to getting your master's. I do tell people that there's three equal pathways post-secondary. We have the college, university, or the apprenticeship pathway. And they really are equal. If you want to lay them out in monetary terms, you can make just as good of a living doing what I do as well as going to the traditional college route or university.
If we could step back from instructing and maybe get more into the nitty gritty of what do you actually do for someone who's never heard of this trade before and who doesn't really know what it is. Could you describe what you do as a refrigeration mechanic and gas fitter? What does a typical day look like?
Such a great question. We see a lot of women, our numbers in Canada, they're really high for electricians and plumbers because I think they're very self-explanatory field of work. And this is no pun on my appearance, but I used to describe HVAC, which might not be PC, but I used to say it's like the redheaded stepchild of the skilled trades. Because nobody knows what we do, right? They're just like, I don't know. My license name is very convoluted. I'm a 313A refrigeration and air conditioning systems mechanic, which is really just a big fancy term that I do heating and cooling. And the word refrigeration comes in because in the trades, you have to look at cooling in a few different ways. Where we are, like in our space, in our home, it's air conditioning, right? You want to be comfortable when it's hot outside. But when you think about, for example, shopping at like the big box stores like Costco, when you go into those nice coolers and freezers to get all the goodies out, that's also part of my trade. So basically, a typical day, there's a couple of different sections. Service is really the meat and potatoes of my industry. And that's where I started my apprenticeship with a company that's commercial industrial service work. So as an apprentice, you're going out doing a lot of maintenance work. So just like your car, we have to do maintenance on these pieces of equipment because there's a lot of moving parts and we want to keep them running, right? So just like an oil change or changing your air filter in your car, we do the same stuff, but with the heating and cooling equipment. And then the other side to that is service calls. So that's when stuff breaks down or shit goes sideways and they they need you on site, right?
Panic. Yeah. Yes.
So basically you're rolling in a truck. The hours are insane depending on what type of a company you're with. I know with myself, like when I was on call, it's basically just like a doctor. The phone rings at 3 a.m. you get out of bed, you get in the truck, and you
go. That's crazy.
So you could be like climbing up onto a roof somewhere in the black of the night, looking for a piece of equipment that's broken down because it needs to be repaired. Now, obviously, some calls are more important than others. If you're talking about working at like a healthcare facility, I've done work at the nuclear plants, data centers. So you're talking sometimes if equipment goes down, that could mean a lot of lost revenue, right? Or hopefully not. But for example, in a healthcare facility, that could mean like the OR is going down. So they couldn't use those rooms if the temperature is not the right temperature. It does sound crazy. And it was when I first started, I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to like that. But really, I loved the rush. There's a bit of a thrill there, right? Mm. So I used to make a joke. I'm like, the only one on the road right now is HVAC mechanics and serial killers. There's literally nobody awake right now. That's it. That's the only people that I don't know right now. I ran like that for about 14 years before I took an in-house position at a local hospital, which is where I'm at now. So the difference there, I call them retirement gigs. I work a steady 8 to 4. I got a nice little workbench where I can have wet breaks. I don't have to eat when I drive anymore. And I have a team of people to help me. When you're by yourself in the service van, it's basically a one-woman show. Like, I diagnose the problem. I quote the customer. I pick up the parts. I go back and I fix it. And that's... So there's a couple different facets of the industry, but really, I would say at the end of it all, it's a solo gig. Unless you're on a bigger project, then you'll be working as part of a team, or you'll have another mechanic or apprentice with you.
That's very cool. I love your answer about HVAC systems, because I think COVID did change our mindset about HVAC systems, but I think we don't necessarily instantly think of temperature as being a core facet of infrastructure.
Yeah.
Coming from a lab, not a lot of my experiences in labs, temperature is a main thing. Like, we have to have constantly not only air temperature in the room, but for our instruments, for within an instrument, the HVAC has to be perfect. There's so many kind of layers of HVAC systems that we need to function correctly.
The humidity levels, right?
Yes.
Humidity, right? Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And that's all part of what we do.
Yeah, it's very fundamental. And I think sometimes people forget about it. I didn't realize how dynamic it was, though, or how, like, it makes sense, because it is such an integral part of a lab or a hospital or a nuclear power plant. But I didn't realize how on the other end of that, you're getting an oh shit call at 3 a.m. and I didn't realize that you guys were like on the road so much when you're doing that service industry. I was wondering if you could speak to your favorite niche thing about being an HVAC mechanic. What's your favorite thing about HVAC, something really niche? And then what is a least favorite? And then why favorite? Why least favorite?
I got lucky, and I think it was probably good because I fell in love hard and fast with the trade because of the equipment I was so fortunate to be exposed to early on. So I worked for a big company and I was a manufacturer. And one really niche piece of equipment is chillers. I had the privilege to start my career on like water-cooled centrifugal chillers. And as an apprentice, I did my first couple teardowns. So exactly as it sounds. These are giant pieces of equipment that just make cold water that is fed through fan coils and then into their respective areas. First of all, let me just say, when my dad explained HVAC to me about when I was looking for trades, he's like, oh, you're just going to work on like quarter inch copper and like the bars.
Huge.
So these machines are like larger than life. And I remember just even first looking at them. But one of the coolest things was the first time I worked with any kind of rigging equipment. So we actually were tearing this one unit down at the hospital. So we bring in this gantry stand with a trolley on it, a chain file, and we're moving a 3,500-pound motor off of this machine to put it on the ground, because it was going to get sent out via a truck to be have the windings rewound and insulated. I loved it. I loved working on the big stuff. I loved rigging stuff out. And then there's a lot of cleaning involved, which I used to joke. I'm like, look, guys, I'm doing what God intended. I'm trying to make like a joke. But they'd be like, okay, Brandy. So big, giant, monstrous machines, right? But things had to be ever so clean, and the tolerances for the part ever so tight. And it just like to take them apart and put them back together and to watch them run, it just totally blew my mind. I know I would never, ever have had the privilege to be exposed to or seen had I not been in the industry. So by far, working on that equipment was my favorite. And in fact, The only thing I regret is that I really didn't find the trade early on where I could have had more time there. Unfortunately for me, the hours just got to be too much at an age where I just wasn't handling it well with some of the other things going on the job. And so that's why I made the move to go in-house. But really, I feel like looking back now after I've had some time to heal, there's so much more I would have wanted out of that. And it's just very cool. Like that's one of those things where not everyone in my world gets to work on that kind of stuff. So
That's so cool that you did get to work on that, even maybe if it was short-lived or you would like in hindsight to be like maybe a little bit more time. It's just cool that you were able to see a system that big and have that impact and to be able to work on it and put it back together. A very accomplishing, like, yes, I did it.
Yeah.
Moment. I wanted to maybe take a step back and to talk about something a little bit different about your new venture, which is Fair Trades Toolbox. Our industry, unfortunately, it's known to have bad culture and it's known to be male dominated and potentially either like a rough or dangerous place to work. And I was wondering if you could speak to this because I know that this is your experience and this is why you started Fair Trades Toolbox, which is the whole mission to change culture and to really work with employers to create a better, more inclusive workspace.
So unfortunately, this past year, I did have an issue with a male coworker at the hospital, and it escalated to a point where there had to be a police report filed.
Oh, no.
Now, by far, that was never the worst thing that's happened to me, but I almost quit the trade about 5 years ago, like entirely, which is crazy now to look at, because I really think that abuse is cumulative, and I'm not a therapist, nor do I pretend to be. When I had a breakdown myself, you can never pinpoint the one thing, but after pretty much 15 years of just a lot of things happening consistently and moving branches or going different places, it was same problems, albeit different people. You try to push forward, especially I'd invested so much in myself. And I just kept thinking, the harder I work, I'll eventually be accepted or if I just keep going. But I was never the problem. And unfortunately, it took a real breakdown for me to realize that. But this past year, that was my moment for when I'd been thinking about Fair Trades for a while. And then I literally said, that's it. I cannot do this anymore. I have been speaking at women in skilled trades events for almost 2 decades, encouraging young women to be a part of an industry that literally almost broke me as a woman and as a person. And it's physically manifesting. I was just mentally shattered. There wasn't anything good going on. And I was completely alone because that's really where I'd gone to a point in my life. And I thought to myself, I either am done or if not me, then who? I'm going to be the solution. I know what the problem is. And I've been living it for 20 years. And I'm like, I am so freaking done with this now. Now it's time. It's not about encouraging women to be a part of this industry, because who doesn't want an amazing career with benefits and pension and room for growth? Everybody wants that. But we can't keep them. We see women drop out, fourth and fifth year apprentice. They get licensed and they leave. And I don't blame them, because no one should have to work through a war zone just for a paycheck. It's insane to me. And it really became the moment where this last year, it brought everything to the surface for me. And I did have that kind of perspective where I did say to myself, honestly, for the first time, it had nothing to do with me. The companies I worked for, they had a stellar HR policy, Fortune 500 companies, but the culture is brutal. It's toxic. Yeah. It comes from the top down. And it's unfair as a female. I've always been the first female wherever I've been. And yet I've been thrown in like a grenade and left to deal with the fallout, right? No one was there to help and nobody had a conversation with anyone to try to address the issues. I think that now I realize we have to start from the top and work our way down. And it's going to be really ugly at first and uncomfortable. And I think that's okay. Yeah. And I think I'm the best person with the experience I bring to the table to have that conversation. And it's not just for the women, it's for the men.
It's for everybody. Yeah.
Because like you said, it's sometimes it's just, they don't know. Yeah. I'm the first woman they've ever worked with. How do they know how to respond to me?
I think like what you just said too, of maybe it's going to be uncomfortable. I think it's already been uncomfortable, but it's only been uncomfortable for one group of people.
For me.
For you, for like the guinea pig and the first person that they're like, oh, wow, you're the first woman in this position or the first person in skilled trades. It's already been uncomfortable from you from the very beginning, but we're expected to deal with that uncomfortableness.
Boldness.
Sorry. in silence and kind of by ourselves and without the like infrastructure to actually talk to somebody or to how are we going to deal with this issue? I think even these big companies, if they have a wonderful HR policy, they don't have the infrastructure in place to actually bring in a diverse staff or bring them into the workplace that allows them to be safe at work and to not deal with terrible toxic culture that kind of grows out of, I think, a lack of infrastructure and some bad people and some bad biases.
Personally, we talk about health and safety at work and we talk about not getting injured on the job. Everyone should be able to go home at the end of their workday. Women are being verbally abused, physically abused, and sexually assaulted. And how do we tolerate that? How is that okay? But we're really worried if somebody cuts their finger at work, right?
Yes.
Like to me, this is just about overall wellness. And I feel a change for women is a change for everyone because as a mentor for Support Ontario Youth, I have young male apprentices that are wanting to quit the trade as well because they're being verbally abused and torn down at work. It's a new generation is coming in. And I feel like there's a lot to be said for that where they're not going to tolerate it. And I don't blame them. So we either are going to be left with this huge skilled trades labor shortage, or we're all going to wake up and we're going to realize it's 2023. And you know what? This industry needs to change and it's going to benefit the employer. It's going to benefit their bottom line. Let's face it, at the end of the day. And all we all have to do is be willing and open to have a conversation and try something different. Because doing the same thing is not working and it's not acceptable anymore.
Freaking amen. And like, thank you so much for creating this organization and having this mission and creating Fair Trades Toolbox. So sorry that it took you going to a personal low to be able to have that push to be like, okay, I do need to make a change. I'm so sorry that you went through that because I couldn't imagine having that moment to be like, I've been wanting women to be in this industry and I've been telling them to go into this industry, but this industry is not changing. Organizations like you that are putting in the infrastructure and talking to employers and talking from the very top and going down to the bottom, I think is probably going to have the biggest impact on ticket skill trades. And I was wondering if you could speak to a little bit of the programs that you guys put in. Like, what are practices that have helped with culture and that employers can put into place to actually change this culture?
So my baby is still very young. I'm just going to be starting to work with one organization. They reached out because they have a third year apprentice that's pregnant. She's an electrical apprentice. And obviously they were like, we have no idea what to do with this young woman. And although she's the first, I do hope she's not the last. So the other thing that happens is this is a company that has no policies or procedures in place to deal with a pregnant person on the tools, right? Prior to her, this wouldn't have happened.
There was no one.
I'm helping to work with them so we can help develop things and figure out the timelines. And every individual will be different. Every company will be different. And that's part of where the consultation service is so important, is that it can be tailored to the companies. But together, we're going to develop, and I'm working with also the women in the company.
Amazing.
Because they understand how that company operates. We'll figure out what is considered light duty. And assuming, of course, this is a normal pregnancy, no complications. How long can she wear a harness for? How long can she lift tools for? And all of that good stuff. What do we do to support her? Can she go to trade school early, maybe, and the end of her pregnancy? So then she would be in school for the last couple months. Is that an option? So that means working, obviously, with government. And then the other side of that coin is, I want to see her come back to work. She is a mom, right?
Yes, completely. Yes.
Because this is the other caveat, is that once a woman has a baby, we never see them come back. So now, how can we make it a safe environment for her? And there'll be provisions in place for her to pump, maybe flexible hours for daycare. How do we support this person coming back? Because she's a talented human that contributes to this company. And I believe we want her back. So this was my foothold in. And really what that turned into after them reaching out for this one thing. In the fall, we're going to hold a town hall with their entire male team and women included. And we're actually going to make it anonymous. I'm almost saying, ask me the most offensive questions that are on your mind. What is something you're afraid of? Are you afraid of sexual harassment? Let's say it. Let's talk about it. What is sexual harassment? What makes you not want to work with that woman? So we're going to set up something. And the woman I'm working with is just incredible that reached out to me. She's so open to all of this. So They're going to ask the questions. We're going to give them the answers. And then out of this together, we're going to build this beautiful new mission for this company. And it's going to help them move forward. Oh, and I believe that forward-thinking companies like the one I'm talking about, they're going to lead the charge. And what you're going to start to see is if companies like this end up having, maybe they'll start out only 10% female. But what happens in a couple of years? Will they have 30 or 40% women? Maybe they will. And I can bet you that they will be doing so much better than the competitors that are left stuck in the Stone Ages, right?
100%.
So that's one example of one of the things I'm doing. The other thing that I'm really passionate about, but it's slow going, it's a slow burn. I'm going to be working with Corrections Canada to help female offenders that are serving short-term sentences for nonviolent crimes think about the skilled trades as a second career. For me, it's working with employers to find employers that are willing to give these candidates a chance. And I'll be going into the facility to work one-on-one with the women to get them job ready. I want to focus on making real change with industry leaders and governments. So working with the employers and really facilitating that overall cultural change, that's what needs to happen. We really need to walk the talk because I come from an environment where they talked a huge talk.
But they didn't walk it.
Yeah. They didn't walk it. And as a result, it wasn't a healthy environment. And I know even though they didn't say it, I know I had a lot of male coworkers that suffered as well.
Yes.
Maybe not to the same degree as me, but it's going to be good for everyone.
Couldn't agree more. The way to make measurable change is putting in place structures and practices. And if you build it, they will come. Like to be able to make the organization suitable for a woman who's dealing with pregnancy and to come back as a new young mom. And you know what that's going to build? That's going to build this system that all of a sudden other moms can come back and come work for this company. It builds lasting change to culture because it creates a support system for a more diverse workforce. And I think that's the bottom goal. That's what we want to move to. So I think what you're doing is so impactful and so powerful. I love that you brought up the corrections program, because I was going to ask you about it, but I think that's also a very powerful mission and a powerful organization. And I think that could be a really cool program to put in place with government and organizations. I think that's fantastic.
Unfortunately, we're still at this stage where you do need to have a little bit of life experience, depending on what type of a company you get into. I have humble beginnings and I have a unique experience. I think that'll resonate with these women prior to getting into the trades. But I think they have what it takes at the end of the day. Obviously, not every single person, but I hate the stigma that surrounds people coming out of corrections. Like, we're all human and I think we're all one bad decision away from being there. We're one bad night. We're one bad hanging in the wrong place at the wrong time. And I just feel like society as a whole, like the first thing people do are looking to check to see if you have a record. And there's so much struggle, but I feel like, again, like Fairtrade's toolbox, the time is right. Because when there's a shortage of something like skilled trades labor, people are forced out of their comfort zone. And now it's an employee-based market. It's the time to really make change for employers and companies and industry. And this is part of that change too. I think we need to look at the best human being for the job and what we bring to the table as individuals, leaving all the rest of it behind. And I know not everyone is going to be a candidate. However, I just know in my gut, I just feel like it's going to be good.
But you don't need everyone to be a candidate. If you can change the life of 10%, 15% of these women, like you might as well take that chance, right? Like, that's a very powerful thing. We've talked about it on the point of view of an employer and how you change culture. If you're a young woman and you're going through it right now and you're in this area, I've been in bad, toxic environments as well.
Yeah.
Could you maybe speak to what helped you get through it? Any advice for these young women if they're going through something similar? What helped you?
That's a great question. For me, is I tried very early on just to be one of the guys. And I think that works against you. I think now I realize looking back, it's better just be yourself. And then you find your fit. And I really encourage my students, male or female, don't worry about the money. I say, find a company where you feel like you're going to enjoy being there. You resonate with the values of the employer or the people that you're going to be working for. You want to work for them. And you get that vibe with people. Number one, be happy where you're at. The money will come. It's inevitable. Like there's too much of a need out there. There's too much of a demand, right? Number two, as hard as it is for a woman, try not to take it personally. So At the end of the day, these guys don't hang out with me and have Sunday dinner. They don't know me as a person, which is to my advantage, right? Let them underestimate you and try just to like water off a duck's back. Try not to get too wrapped up in the sweethearts and the honeys and all the comments. There's bigger fish to fry, right? So try not to get wrapped up in that, because like you and I have mentioned a couple times, sometimes it's not meant intentionally or out of spite. They just don't know any better, right? Which doesn't make an excuse for them, but it does help you get through the day. When you have to go for a cry and you got to let it out, do it, man.
Yeah, that's good advice.
Go to the bathroom. Get it out, wipe your eyes, put your big girl pants on, and then you get back out. As women, I think we feel like crying is a weakness, but it's just instead of punching a wall or throwing something like a man might do, we cry. And that's okay, because you got to get it out. And to that note, one of my best pieces of advice is waterproof mascara. You got to smash your $2 for sure. And then the last thing I know that really helped me is I only had one friend that came up in the tools with me as a female. I started off way back when in this pre-apprentice program when I had a hard time getting into the trades. Her and I today are still tight. And without her, I would still never be sitting here today. She took the call for me. I'll never forget sitting in my truck. My first construction site was 300 guys and me. And I showed up early and I was watching all these guys walk onto the job site. And I remember calling her going, I can't do it. I'm not doing it. I'm leaving. I'm freaking out. And she goes, this will be the hardest thing you have to do. By the way, she lied. And she just said the same thing to me. She goes, remember why you're doing this. Remember the long-term goals. You earned your spot there, Randy. And she goes, you just put your head down and you go to work. Because at the end of the day, I'm a journey person, not a female journey person.
No, you're a journey person. Yeah, you deserve to be there.
I wrote the same test as all my male counterparts. I've earned my spot and I got to tune out the noise, right? Having a female to lean on, to listen to, that's in the trades. My family's amazing. Doesn't resonate with me. Doesn't make me feel better when my partner or family goes, you can do it, right? Yeah. They don't know, right? But when another woman who's in the trenches with me says, you know what, Brandy, suck it up. You're just having a moment. And I'm like, yeah. And then I listen to some angry music and away we go. Rage Against the Machine works. Pantera.
Yeah.
Whatever. A support system is key. Letting it out when you have to. Try to find a healthy outlet and get it out. You have to do that. If you're able to, if you think you're in a bad spot, which I wish I would have recognized earlier, make the change before it's too late. Like for me, I was beaten down to a point where I honestly felt like I couldn't get a job anywhere else. I felt like I was the worst mechanic in the world. So try to recognize those signs early that you are in an abusive work relationship. It's getting out because there's too much work out there. You no longer need to stay in one place. Don't let them make you feel like you're just there as the token female, right? Any woman I know that's working out on the tools today, she had to work 1,000 times harder to get there. And we got to remind ourselves of that.
I think like sometimes we do get kind of locked down into that to be like, oh my goodness, they're doing me a favor. And again, it's kind of, it's putting yourself in that position that you're not deserving of it to be like, no, I did the same hours. I did the same work experience. I got my apprenticeship. I'm a journey person. And on top of that, like I had a bunch of biases and prejudice on top of me while I was doing all of those things. So I fought my way through. I deserve my place in this. I really do hope that our culture does change because I resonated too much with the mascara. I was like, oh yeah, that's a good tip. And I was like, we shouldn't have that as a tip. That should be like waterproof mascara. But it is.
Sometimes the jobs went to like the one type first. It's good to have it too, right? So I mean, it works on both sides, but
That's true. But I do think like that point of letting it out and having a release and having friendships and community within these industries are so important until we can get past the Stone Age. Like having my girlfriends within STEM and them being a figure that I can cry on, I can vent, I can talk about my frustrations. They can also tell me some tough love and to be like, nope, you're fine. You got this. Go have a cry, take a coffee. But like, again, this industry and this job isn't the be all end all. You have a life outside of it. You have people outside of it. Like, just take a break, reframe, go big, and then come back and do this. Put on loud, angry music and get to work.
Oh, man. Yeah. I had a couple of jobs where I had to work with, I knew people that were, I knew my days were going to be nightmares. And the whole drive to the job site were either super like female empowerment songs. And then on the way home, it'd be super angry music, right? Yeah. You got to do whatever it takes. And sometimes only you can be your best cheerleader. Just keep your eye on the prize, right? And know too, like we're all making a difference out there. All of us, like the visibility is key. Mm. Podcasts, what you do every day, young woman out there, we're all making a difference every day. And I guess that's part of the grind that concerns me is like the needle hasn't moved in my industry for 20 years. I represent 0.4% of my trade. That doesn't speak to recruitment. That speaks to retention. We have to keep up the visibility. But then at the same time, that's why myself, with what I have under my belt in the field, I'm going to take up that charge and start, instead of breaking that glass ceiling, I guess I'm coming from the top down now. So
bringing it down from a ceiling to like lobby. Basically.
Yeah, I'm smashing through the roof now. That's it. I'm all done.
I absolutely love that. Sometimes it feels like the needle hasn't moved in 20, 30 years. I do think that right now we're at this really crazy time, I think, with social media, with visibility, representation, that you can just feel it, that it's about to change and it's about to start. Yeah. I was wondering if you could speak to that and maybe what's something right now that's giving you hope.
I definitely think what gives me hope is just that I think that more women are starting to use their voice. I posted this really emotional video a couple months ago about what happened to me at the hospital, a little snippet of it, I guess. And after I did that, it was almost like this Me Too skilled movement, I guess. Oh. I had just this flood of messages and so many women are like, yeah, I thought that too. Once I was licensed, it would get better. I was at a big event at Conestoga College. It's called Jill of All Trades. And it's an amazing event of 500 young women come through, volunteers. And I was leaving the building at the end of the day, and this female journey person comes up to me and she said to me, I filed a sexual harassment complaint against my boss because of your video.
Oh, amazing.
And she said, instead of blaming myself and just sweeping it under the carpet as I had done before, because this is not her first, she says, I decided to use my voice and have the courage. Oh. And I feel like that in itself, if imagine what would happen to the culture of this industry, every single woman out there working on the tools today just said, nah, no more. I am not going to just look the other way at this. I'm going to actually say something about it. I do feel it's percolating. I feel like just the time is right. We've got this perfect storm of a shortage of skilled labor. They have no choice now but to look to the other 50%. And we are not going to tolerate being treated the way we have been for the past two decades. And you know what? I am going to ensure that this industry starts to bend to be more inclusive and the culture turns into more, it's got to be healthier. We have to start thinking about the wellness of all of our employees and young women, like the woman I met the other day, and also just the flood of messages I get in my inbox. Yeah. It's just incredible. I really feel like the time is right. And that's part of my motivation to strike while the iron's hot, right? I really started doing this and I'm like, I don't even know if this is going to work. But like those early days of the cabin, I'm totally ready to at least give it my all and fail. And that's okay if that happens. But I really can't see that happening just because of there's such a need for it. We're hungry for change. So for the last two decades, I guess that's been my penance. And I can use all of that now in order to help the next generation will be able to thrive. And where I really just survived. I like what you're saying, you have to do all this stuff. And the whole time I had somebody's boot on my throat. It's time for that to change for the next generation. And it benefits everyone, which
completely.
I think the best part.
It's a win-win-win. It benefits everybody. It benefits employees. It benefits bottom line. It benefits culture. It benefits the next generation. I think what you're doing is so important. It's a wonderful organization. And not only is it the right time, but I think that the younger generation also wants it as well, right? It is just this movement. And I could see that being so hopeful and so impactful to have these young women message you to be like, you made such a difference in my life, whether you know it or not. Seeing you stand up and seeing you use your voice allowed me to do the same thing. Something that's like kind of catching wildfire that's really hard to put back once it's out. And
that's when I come.
Brandy, thank you so much for coming onto the show today. I really appreciated it. It was so lovely to chat with you. And thank you for all the good that you're doing for the community. I think it's fantastic.
Thank you so much, Alexis. It's been an honor. I love what you're doing too. And it's so great to have that female camaraderie out there too. So thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. You're welcome. You're welcome. I appreciate everything that you can do. And thank you so much for coming on. Thank you guys for listening, for watching. We appreciate you as well. And we will see you next Wednesday.